Welcome to Red Pill University. Class is in session. I am Joe. I am here with Mike tonight. James is, speak of the devil. There he is. James, are you ready? He might be having some technical difficulties. We're going to push forward. So tonight, we're going to do a quick recap of what we covered last week, and we'll continue on as James is here, but he's just having some technical issues. All right, so recapping last week. So the court, I'm going to take him out of the stream just temporarily. When he's back in, I'll bring him back in. There yet? I can mute him. There we go. So some of the worst advice you can get right now in the dating world is to just be yourself. Just be confident. The right girl will come along someday. We've all heard these platitudes. Why don't they work? And it says it right there. They're just, it's not realistic. It doesn't take into account reality. What good is all this stuff if Miss Wright does come into your periphery? You see her, but you don't have the skills to get her attention and maintain it. So what are the alternatives? And this is, I love this quote from Neil Strauss: become the best version of yourself. Do you have any thoughts on that, Mike?
Yeah, and we can speak about this in just a moment, but the idea of, you know, really Mr. Right, understanding that there's somebody out there for you. It's just not really in line with kind of what, you know, all the guys that are kind of woken up and seen, oh, there are some real consistent behaviors, and they have nothing to do with trying to find that special somebody. So that's kind of the only thing I would add there. And that's that largely is, for me, is a big reason why the traditional stuff doesn't work about, it telling guys that, you know, you got to be more sensitive. You got to open up with your emotions. You got to be more communicative. You got to find your love language.
Got to be in tune with your feminine side.
Yeah. You know, whatever it is that is the traditional stuff that you hear from, you know, from the women's side of the fence, and I think it all means well, honestly. Like, I don't, you know, I think they believe that that's what really would pay off in the relationship, and in a lot of ways I just think that traditional advice is counterintuitive, because what, you know, in my experience and a lot of other guys' experience, what's worked for them in terms of real desire, real attractiveness, is just not in line with that stuff.
Yep. It ties in with the feminine imperative, which it's kind of outside the scope of tonight's discussion. James, are you on with us? I see you're there.
Yo,
but
what's up?
Now there we got you. All right. So that's good. Do you have any thoughts on this? And can you see the presentation?
Yes.
Okay, that's good. All right.
Thoughts on becoming my best self?
Yeah.
Yes.
You just got to work hard every day.
Yep. All right. So right now we're just doing a recap for those who are just joining us. This recap is covering what we covered last week, and then we're going to push forward onto the subjects for tonight, and we're going to drill down a little bit after we do the overview. So again, recap, overview, then we're going to do a deep dive on an individual topic. All right. So recapping on last week, this course is not pickup. It's not PUA stuff. Although I did take what lessons were that I learned from it, and I've kind of integrated this into life lessons, military experience, and just all the other stuff that we've kind of gathered in the community in general. So how, with this course, you're going to learn how to screen for women and why, how to structure your lifestyle. We're going to build you a roadmap for building confidence through, again, experience and positive reinforcement are absolutely critical. That's the training wheels that this course presents from the PUA standpoint. Just training wheels, so you can get the experience and positive reinforcement that builds confidence. Competence builds confidence, all right? And then again, developing social acuity. Moving forward, so last week we covered the KISS model, the KISS principle, keep it simple, stupid. Approach and stay, hit the gym, eat right, dress your best, and then get into a habit of talking to everyone. Now, one of the things about dressing your best is this kind of overlaps with peacocking. So once you go to a venue a couple of times, you're going to get an idea of what the average wear is, how guys present themselves. All you have to do to stand out better is to be about 10% better. Have one or two items that stand out in a positive way, that get attention, that give reason, give women a reason to talk to you. It's just to get over that initial hump, that awkwardness of social interaction. So again, just be about, dress about 10% better than everyone else. If you're going someplace like, for example, DC, everybody's usually in a casual attire.
Business casual, yeah.
Business casual. That's the best way of looking at it. Yeah. So you don't necessarily need to wear a tie, but if you did, you're going to stand out, you know, from the crowd. Maybe a hat. I don't know. Think about it. A nice watch. Any kind of accessory that draws the attention in a positive light is a good way to go. You don't need to have platform shoes and wear a top hat and dress in goth, like in black fingernails. This isn't.
Totally. I think it's important to hit on why this works. Why this works for just getting people's attention, especially women. I think women are incredibly observant. Most guys miss that. Yep. You know, women are hyper aware of the best dressed guy in the room, right? The most fit guy in the room, the most well groomed guy in the room. And so I think it's real easy to lose sight of that if you're not putting yourself in a lot of social situations consistently.
Shoes are a good example of that. Women notice guys if they've got scuffed up shoes.
100%.
Yeah, it says something. And it's funny too. You've probably seen the meme around where a woman was complaining about guys attacking her for wearing the same dress 2 weekends in a row or something like that. And like the assurance, the male response was, trust me, no guy is going to notice this stuff. It's going to be women that'll be attacking you on social media. Guys don't care. We don't catch this stuff. It's not really what we're groomed from birth to pay attention to. So if you wear the same dress 2 weekends in a row, most guys are not even going to care, even if they did catch it.
Yeah, 100%.
Let's see. So again, just recapping goals, standards, and expectations. Goals. What do you want to improve? Think about short, medium, and long-term goals. Personally, I don't really have I've always had a hard time defining what a medium-term goal is. Short-term, you know it when you see it. It's upfront. It's usually a few days to a few weeks at most, possibly a few months, depending on the context. Long-term, you know it when you see it. It's like porn or the obscenity laws. If it's beyond that short-term time horizon, for me, I just treat that as a long-term goal. For you, then maybe that's a medium-term goal. You know, tomato, tomato. But the goals need to be specific, measurable, practical. You have to have a mechanism for tracking your progress and avoid obstacles. If you know something's going to be a problem for you, eliminate it, disqualify that objection, that obstacle ahead of time. And again, have a plan for tracking your progress and for avoiding slips. As soon as you realize you're screwing up, maybe you're not going to the gym, and it's Friday. Don't wait till Monday to start going back to the gym. Go that night. Go on Saturday. Go on Sunday. The sooner you initiate corrective actions, the easier it will be to get back on the bandwagon. Now, as far as tracking your progress, now I talked about last week that a really simple mechanism you can do is 30 minutes of FaceTime each and every day whenever you go out and do cold approach. Tracking your progress. Have a little notepad or something in your phone that says you made X amount of approaches. Get a framework or give yourself feedback. Track how these interactions went, how much time you're actually having face-to-face. If you're not going to do this and you're just kind of wing it, your results are going to reflect the seriousness of your effort. So you're going to get out of it what you put into it. And tracking that goes a long ways to keeping yourself on track and keeping yourself honest.
Yeah, I think what's worth touching on here is everything really needs to be kind of connected to your mission. It comes down for me to the three rules, right? Of be attractive, don't be unattractive, which in my mind is incongruent. And then thirdly is have a mission and pursue it. And that's what I would emphasize here when it comes to goals. When you get to the point where you're able to track everything toward your mission, to say, you know, oh, I'm going out and I'm talking to people just because, you know, some guy with a red hat on the internet told me to go do it. It doesn't make any sense, right? If you make it your personal mission to say, you know what, I want to connect with more people. I want to grow my social network. That's the type of person I want to be. I want to avail myself of, you know, deep, rich friendships and deep, meaningful relationships. And that's the kind of person that I want to be. I can't sit at home and play video games all day, right? I need to go expose myself to these things. And if you start to internalize that at a deep level, then you will start to get on the path toward being where you want to be.
Exactly. All right. Continuing with the recap. All right. So standards and expectations. This is something that I have harped on for years now, and people have given me a lot of grief in different forms because apparently guys aren't supposed to have standards. Who knew? So you see this online all the time in various forms and social media. You know, if you express having standards and expectations, man, out comes the shaming language. People do not like this. And we're going to get into this a little bit later. What's that?
How dare you? Yeah.
How dare you? Exactly. So what qualities are you looking for? Again, take some time and put in some introspection and really think about what matters to you most. Is it just a little fun-sized blonde with big boobs with no personality? Think about what matters to you. So what we tell you, what the community might say that you should go for, it doesn't matter. Really think about what matters most to you as an individual, because this is going to shape your goals, your methodology, everything. This isn't just for women. This is for fitness. This is for your career. This is for your education. The same rules apply. You got to have your goals defined. Otherwise, you're going to be flying blind by the seat of your pants, winging it, and you're not going to have any – dude, it's just going to make life so much harder if you don't have some intent in what you're doing in life. So this 100%. This process will help walk through that process.
I do want to caveat, though. So when you say that nobody on the internet's going to tell you what to look for and what not to look for, that's true. You know, nobody can – prescribe.
Well, we can't tell you what's right for you as an individual. Yeah,
correct. Nobody can be prescriptive. What we can do is say, look, if you're a guy that really doesn't understand how not to get manipulated, you should probably look out for a girl that's just after your wallet, right? You should absolutely be aware of not sticking your dick in crazy, that type of thing. And so I think that not to caveat it too much, but I think that there are some general archetypes that you should probably be aware of that are driven by all of this behavior that we're going to cover.
Exactly.
You know, I find it useful, all the anecdotal evidence, especially when I wasn't like, when I hadn't dated a lot of girls, hadn't been with a lot of girls, to like help like show me like what types of girls that there are. I don't know if that makes sense, but like
with limited experience,
if you have limited experience, how are you supposed to know like what's like possible in terms of what a woman will do for you and what she can do for you, or you know, what expectations are unrealistic. So
especially in the terms of what you don't want, if you don't have a lot of experience with women and you're taking the first thing that comes along, you don't have the bad experiences to inform like, holy crap, these are all red flags I should be avoiding, because you don't have the experience. That's one of the things I really like this community, that we have all kind of got this brain trust, this collected experiences of hundreds of thousands, if not millions of men over decades, if not centuries. Some of the stuff in this community goes back, Jesus, to BC, Aristotle, Plato. But I digress. We're still doing the recap. We're already about 15 minutes in. So again, know what you're screening for. Screen for the qualities you want. Speak up. Make sure you're vocal about what your intent is. And then also, what happens if they fail to measure up? You've got to be able to back it up. If you don't, then you're just going to find yourself being walked all over. All right, moving on. So if you haven't done it yet, I prescribed these exercises last week. I want you guys to go do them if you haven't done them already. Now, getting into this week's material. What is the Matrix? This is right there in the comments. Reality. Thank you again, Ribney. Welcome, Happa, Blake. Also, I mentioned it before, smash that like button because it really helps out with that YouTube algorithm. Also, please hit the subscribe button, hit that notification bell. YouTube is funny. It is ran by our leftist overlords, and anything that's not politically correct, they will try and hide from you. We've seen this across the internet, from all the social media is guilty of this now. So just make sure you're hitting the subscribe. Hitting that notification bell is clutch. Otherwise, when we push these videos out, you may not see them. All right, so what do we got here? So now we're not going to cover all of this tonight, just so you're clear. We're going to cover the Matrix, the reality, and we're going to begin diving into the terms and theory that makes this community up, that we were just talking about, the collected experiences and knowledge of all of these guys who have come before us. We are just standing. We
talked about this last week.
What is the red pill? Right. Yeah. What is the matrix? What is the red pill? And
it's tough to define.
It is. I had a video and I realized I can't play it because of copyright. It is on the channel, I think, but I don't want to get it embedded in this video in case they flag it or strike it.
There's no way that people can't find this video.
Right. And I found this out the hard way with when I was doing the status report a couple of Saturdays ago. For whatever reason, Disney didn't like me using one of their clips. So yeah, they yanked it for a couple of days. But in like I said, if you want to find out more, go watch last week's episode of this course because we already dove into this. All right. I love this quote. Seeing reality for what it is the first step in changing it. This is an old Tom Likas quote. Now, love him or hate him, he and Patrice O'Neill are like two peas in a pod. They had different approaches to this subject matter, but they're both right, in my opinion, for a lot of stuff. So you may not agree with their presentation, but the underlying principles are sound, 9 times out of 10. All right, so the reality, the alpha, beta, omega, oh my. So the red pill is just a framework for understanding modern relationships in the real world. We got, like I said before, we have a lot of platitudes, you know, just be yourself, blah, blah, blah. It's not practical. The information we're giving you here is going to be practical solutions that you guys can implement for guiding your relationships and dating strategies. That's all it is. So the body agenda is, we've talked about this again on other videos. Women have a pluralistic mating strategy. And when they're at the height of ovulation, they tend towards more alpha characteristics, strong jawline, tall guys, big buff dudes. But the rest of the month, they tend towards beta qualities, the providers, you know, the dad bods. Maybe they don't desire it per se, but it's the dad versus cad traits. That dichotomy plays out throughout women's monthly cycles. And there's a lot of research. We've already thrown this into other videos. Go watch those on the channel if you don't believe me. It's already out there. See, the goal that I'm trying to get you guys to do is to find balance. Most guys that find this community have an abundance of the beta male traits, but they're lacking the alpha male traits. So the idea, this is why we say hit the gym, eat right, because most guys need to alpha up in a sense. That's, matter of fact, that was an old blog we had, alpha up.
Yeah, but I mean, we talk about strategy. The guys that will have as many options as possible. You know what we talked about last week of just availing yourself as many options as possible are the guys that are well groomed, well dressed, you know, relatively physically fit, and a lot of those, you know, oh, these are my hobbies or this is my income level or all that stuff that people think women really place a high priority on. I think they take for granted the basics of things that are super in your control, having decent nutrition, right? Taking care of your skincare, that type of basic stuff. And that all of those things put together and having that self-discipline, that self-leadership that we discussed last week is going to put you in the higher standards. It's going to put you above 80% of guys.
Owning your shit.
Give you those options. Yeah. Just owning everything about your day to day. So that's really what the Bondi agenda kind of bullet point touched on for me and what I got out of that.
All right. James, anything to add?
No.
So, yeah. And again, the goal is to find balance. So, and for those that don't know, the alpha trait characteristics we're talking about, it's right here. That's going to trigger your dopamine. It's exciting. The beta qualities, this is your pair bonding, the sex hormones that you get. This is one of the reasons why a lot of partners, a high end count for women is terrible. It just really screws the brain chemistry up. The more you do this, what happened to the frame episode? For whatever reason, Rollo has not gotten back to me. So we're going to do frame in this course. Trust me. That's a huge section coming up. Oh, yeah. So just stay with us, guys. All right. Going into the reality. So again, we just touched on this a little bit ago about social media. It's counterculture. We are hit with a lot of shaming language, disdain, scorn, you name it. Again, because it challenges the status quo. This is the whole concept of the red pill. It's counterculture. So on that note, feminine imperative, what is it? This is the entirety of basically society as it is today is geared towards propping up women many times at the expense of men. A good, clear, and concise example of this is the draft. So people don't realize that the reason that men got the draft, which was only a few decades before women did, is because men were cannon fodder. And the powers that be, there was a lot of legislation and back and forth and discussions in this in Congress way back. And Karen Strawn did an entire video about this a few years ago. I'll have to link it down in the description. It's good stuff. But the point being is that the feminine imperative, the entirety of society over basically the last 100 years now, give or take, ever since they got the draft or the right to vote, is slowly changed to be in women's favor. And this just took off like a bat out of hell with the sexual revolution and the advent of the pill. And since then, it's just, it's been crazy. It's unchecked and open hypergamy. It's all hands on deck when it comes to that.
Yeah. Even before the sexual revolution, women were valued higher than men, right? It was yep. Women and children were the most valued people.
And we could probably do a whole political video on this about,
we could, and yeah. I don't want to get off of that, but but the feminine imperative really, it's tough from a philosophical standpoint to see in your day to day, or, you know, for a tough, even from a political standpoint to see in your day to day. But what it really involves is, you know, for me, it goes back to the natural law. Men and women are not inherently equal. That's not to say they're not equal in terms of their value as humans, but they're not equal in every single way, in every single aspect.
Right. Men have advantages in certain ways. Women have advantages in others. Detriments the same way. It's that whole yin and yang where we are complementary to one another. The masculine and the feminine, they kind of clicks together.
100%. Yep. So anytime you see the instinct to kind of level the playing field, right, of you know, basically spread around the benefits of somebody's, you know, work or their, you know, intellectual, you know, capital that they've invested, it's really a slippery slope.
Yep.
And 9 times out of 10, that's what we refer to as the feminine imperative of just protect at all costs the interests of, you know, women and their ability to control, you know, kind of the terms of relationships.
Yep. And this, I'll tell you what would change all of this, just as a quick, you know, caveat. If men ever got a pill, like, you know what I'm talking about? So that would change everything. Women would have to change their entire mating dynamic to get men to commit to them, to have kids.
It's fascinating, right? Like the iron rule of Tomasi is never let a woman control the birth, and virtually no man adheres to that iron rule.
And if guys did in a subcutaneous, that's not the word. You know how women's arousal is, it's hidden from view. Mm-hmm. And when it comes to male arousal, it's not. But if men could hide their fertility in a, I'm going blank on the word, in a way not that a women,
superficial way.
Yeah, if it wasn't obvious that they could hide it in a way that women couldn't tell, it would absolutely upend society as we know it. Yep. But anyways, haters gonna hate. And you see this all the time with crab bucket mentality. Anytime a guy starts to get ahead in relation to his current social circle, you'll see a lot of naysayers and a lot of negativity in that social circle trying to drag him back down. This is when guys start getting better with women. It's when they start getting better at the stock market. It's when they might start rising up the ranks in their employment. This is why, and oftentimes, whenever someone that's former enlisted becomes an officer, they have to get sent to another base. They can't go back to their old unit. Similarly, when people on the line say at GM, one of them gets promoted to becoming a foreman, they got to move them to a different part of the factory, and they'll end up losing a lot of their old former friends. It's all crab legged mentality. It's this haters gonna hate. So this is, I think it's one of the iron rules to Tomasi. It's easier to build new alignments in social circles than it is to try and
repair old ones. Yeah,
exactly.
And I think that's, yeah. I think that there's a corollary to that to me, and it's that you are the average of the 5 people you surround yourself with most closely, right?
I love that quote. Yeah.
Yeah, and it is, if you are not surrounding yourself with the type of people that you know want to be, or you know want to be a few years in the future, or that you feel like you aspire to today, then You know, you are with people that are holding you back.
Yep.
Sadly.
Covert. He put the word in. That's the one I was looking for. Sorry. Didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, you're good. You're good.
Yeah. All right. I do like that though. Moving on. So we're finally diving into the concepts. So the first rule of relationships, the person that's least invested is going to control the frame. So at least they're going to be the one that the other one is. So if I'm less invested than, say, the girlfriend, you're going to find that, and I'm sure guys have been in this situation before where you're not sure where you stand with the woman. So you find yourself walking on eggshells. It's never a fun place to be. And the easy way to fix that is to kind of reverse the frame a little bit where you're now the one it's got the control. And then they're seeking the seeking approval, seeking comfort and your
validation.
Attention, the validation. Yeah. So as soon as you flip that, man, the power that gives is monumental. It's a huge shift in the frame. And the first time guys see this, try not to go overboard and have, because if you do, it's going to blow up in your face. It's kind of like cocky funny from David D'Angelo, where cocky funny, cocky comedy. If you do it too much, you end up becoming an asshole. So it's you got to walk a fine line when you're doing it.
For a lot of guys, it is really refreshing to live in a woman's frame. But I think this bears actually reading out. So, you know, it's emphasized the person with the most power is the one who needs the other the least. And that goes back to the rule of be attractive, don't be unattractive, which is don't be needy.
Yep.
Really, it's not that you can't have needs and wants, like everybody does, and that's your imperative, but don't be overly needy. And there is a real line, right? Of if you are constantly seeking out validation from other people, blah, blah, blah. Like there's a million of those examples, but that is the first rule. And it's worth mentioning that if you enter in a relationship with that dynamic in your favor, sky's the limit, right? It's so much easier than trying to repair it after the fact.
Indeed.
I mean, it's basically abundance mentality is the first rule, really. I mean,
it can certainly give you the it'll shake off that frame of neediness for sure.
I mean, it just depends. If you don't need the other person because you don't really care, or just because you have options, it's better if you have abundance though, and if she can see it, because dread game is way stronger than just, like, even though it is strong to be able to not need the other person just because you're validated internally by yourself. But I think when women can see, like, you're flirting with other girls in front of your girlfriend or like a plate or whatever, it's just too good, and they have to be able to see it.
Yeah, you cannot do dread by talk. It's got to be displayed. And the most powerful one is whenever they're seeking your attention, but you're batting them away. That is something where something is going to a gear will slam in their head, and it is just crazy. It's fun stuff.
Yeah, I agree. It's always, you know, the really them buying into the mission or the vision that you've got there is going to be always less powerful than the competition element.
Yep. All right. Speaking of competition, this is going to be a tricky one. Alpha widows. Alpha widows. Now, a woman whose past lover was an alpha male. Alpha in this context just means one of those guys is in that top 10, 5, 10, 20%. Could have been a high status guy like a celebrity. Could have been some rich dude that just doted on him. Who knows? It's often going to be someone who they encountered early on in life. And this is, again, why a high end count is rough. Because now you're competing against their highlight reel, and no one wants to be that the second fiddle or the guy that they're settling for. So going for them when they're younger tends to work out better, because you're going to be less likely to run into an alpha widow. Again, maybe you're going to be the one that alpha widows them. Hopefully not, but if you're doing your things right, maybe who knows? I digress. The point being that if you run into an alpha widow, the problem is, again, the highlight reel, they're still going to have in their head that this is the bare minimum now of what they can get. So anybody that doesn't match that level or above is going to be really fighting an uphill battle. Let's see. Anti-slut defense. This one's kind of controversial, But you see this in the pickup world all the time. It's whenever you start, things are going well. You might have met them in a cold approach, like in a bar or a club or something like that. And you hear this, I've never done this before. Or they tell their friends after you've hooked up, well, we just went back to his place and one thing led to another. It's all it is. It's just, it's giving them the plausible deniability that they didn't intend to have sex, but they did. And it wasn't their, it's leaving them of responsibility for what happened. It's all it comes down to.
Yeah, it's interesting how this happens in relationships too, is women always want to give themselves an out, right? You get into a, conversation or argument about X, Y, Z, and they want to be able to save face, right? If they're wrong, it's not about taking accountability and saying, I made a mistake, I'm going to fix X, Y, Z. It's about, hey, I gotta, you know, that may not have been the way to speak to you, but, and there's always a caveat about, I also, there were some other things that happened here that I'm not quite responsible for.
Now, are you talking about deering?
I'm talking about from a female standpoint, right? Okay. Like it manifests itself differently in relationships is my only point, than it does when it's just, it's super easy. You know, when you're, first meeting a woman to just, have that come up and it's, basic anti-slut defense. And you'll say, 95% of the time, if you're taking it seriously, you're just making the wrong move. And the same goes true for a relationship largely, but it manifests itself differently is my only point.
That's fair. And again, it's just ASD is just, it's so that they don't look bad. They're not going to get judged in their social circle is what 9 times out of 10, that's what it comes down to.
Yep. Right. Women are so overly concerned with perception. Yeah.
Yeah. It's that social judging perception. Like you said, absolutely. All right. Let's see here. Approach anxiety. This is something I've kind of, wouldn't say I'm an expert at it, but I've kind of got this one on lockdown. It's a combination of fear of rejection and stage fright, AKA love shyness. Everybody in life has felt this at some point or another. And for years, this is all I focused on, was just trying to get over the approach anxiety and working on openers to give guys the tools for how to navigate this nervousness that they'll feel when it happens. And that's really just, that's the stage fright portion of it. That fear of rejection goes away once you build that confidence, because then you just kind of go into it. You know what you're going to do. You've got a plan of action. You're a man of action because you've done it so often that you can kind of judge what the response is going to be based on what signals they're giving you. And we're going to cover those later on. Boobs versus booze. This is an interesting one. Research has been done on this in MRIs. And I wish I could find the old links for this. But the gist of it was, when they showed men pictures of hot women, the same parts of their brain activated and deactivated, comparable to men that were under the influence of alcohol. So when they say guys think with their dick, they're kind of talking about that. Yeah, this is what they're talking about. So be mindful of that. Make sure that you're making sound decisions based on the information we talked about earlier, the goals and standards and expectations, not just being love blind and letting your judgment go out the window because she's hot. Also, the more you're around hot women and build up that your experiences, the less this will affect you. That's one of the things that I found interesting. So if you date a lot of hot women, you become kind of numb to, or acclimated, it's probably the best word for it. You become acclimated to the looks so that this stops happening to you. Breuvholtz law, we talked about this before the show. This is critical. The female, not the male, determines all the conditions of the animal family. Where the female can derive no benefit from association with the male, no such association takes place. But wait, there's more. That's corollaries. So profound, it is profound. The corollaries. Past benefit provided by the male does not provide for continued or future association. Any agreement where the male provides a current benefit in return for a promise of future association is null and void as soon as the male has provided the benefit. Lastly, a promise of future benefit has limited influence on current or future association with the influence inversely proportionate to the length of time until the benefit will be given and directly proportionate to the degree to which the female trusts the male. There's a lot to unpack here.
Oh, man. Yeah.
So first
we just
off,
spend a minute talking about that.
We're going to, yeah, we, well, let me see here how
let's
we're
going to let's not unpack it. Let's,
let's continue on to the dark triad portion. And then we're going to circle back around to Bruffelt's law because this one, there's a lot to it. So we're going to move forward just a little bit briefly. Now, for those that don't know, dark triad is just these three personality traits, narcissism, Machiavellianism, and basically psychopaths. They are massively attractive to women, at least in the short term, especially when they're in the ovulation phase of their cycle. And again, why are, what is the old saying? You know, nice guys finish last, chicks dig jerks. Why are bad boys attractive? Right here, this is why. So I should say over here. Yeah, that's why. You got they're power driven, tend to be high status. This is going to be your, think of it in terms of, what was the guy's name from American Psycho? Bond managers, guys in finance, they're really driven, tend to be some flavor of dark triad. They're going to be extroverted. They're going to have low levels of neuroticism. They're going to be dominant and they charge forward for good or for bad and go for what they want. And that's one thing that a lot of guys lack. This is what we talked about before, trying to amp up your alpha qualities because a lot of guys don't go for what they want. They see a pretty girl and they do nothing about it. Don't be like that. So hopefully amping up your extrovertedness will help out with that. Again, low amounts of empathy and agreeableness. They're more dominant. They are going to keep you on your toes. Women like a challenge. So if you are overly agreeable, you're not a challenge. Rocket science, I know. Not prone to being needy or over investing. We've covered this already. And in other words, like I said, they're a challenge. And there's more to this as well. Why don't you guys talk about that for a second? Mike and James.
Yeah, I think when you talk about, you know, women and how they look at things in terms of being a challenge and so forth, I think what's important to remember is to some degree, everybody likes a challenge, right? So you can relate to that as a guy, you know, even just starting out. But what's really, really critical to realize is these are the things that traditionally indicate that a guy's, you know, DNA is going to carry on. You know, for generation after generation, from an evolutionary biology standpoint, you know, we hit on that a little bit last week. But you know, the power driven element is you are going to be more likely to be able to provide resources, right? Being extroverted, you are going to be tied into a social structure that's going to help you protect your family and be able to provide for the resources. On and on and on. And so it's interesting, especially in a situation like today where more people orientated toward, hey, how do I survive, right? How do I survive, you know, in modern times, given the current situation of, you know, we're in a global quarantine, right? So to relate it all to that of, I think people are looking less for guys that have, you know, 2 million followers on Instagram, right? It's, can these gentlemen put food on the table? Right. Can they actually pick me up and carry me around if, God forbid, our house catches on fire? I'm talking about basic stuff. And that is, it's hardwired. It's really tough to overcome basic thoughts like that.
Right.
James, I'm interested in your thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically impossible. I think that it's so interesting when you look at evolutionary, like, psychology. And we definitely, I mean, we evolved in the wild in tribes. And anything that connects to that, if you can connect something to that and root it in some explanation evolutionarily, then you're probably onto something. I remember reading one story. I can't remember where, if it was on Red Pill or something, where this guy was out with his chick and like things were going well and whatever. And she saw this guy just piss on somebody's car. And she ended up banging him. She like, it was just so funny. Like, I don't know, you know, you never know all the details. Like, was the guy beta, like what, everything else. But she kept saying that he was like an asshole, that he was like this insane guy, but like, he was just some Machiavellian moron and he pissed on a car and doing some crazy shit, having a good time on his own terms. And, you know, he got laid. So by someone he didn't even talk to or know.
So I have something that kind of piggybacks on that really nicely is these guys who go to jail for horrendous crimes and get love letters and marriage proposals by women all the time.
It's fascinating. So
it's mind-boggling how that happens. And then there's also the fact that being a challenge, when they do win you over, they're going to be massively more invested in you and the relationship than they will if you just gave them all that attention for free. That's the plus side, the positive that you guys got to take away from this. Not you two, but the audience. So the more you make them work for it, and you got to thread that needle so you don't be too much of a challenge that they just say, fuck it, juice isn't worth the squeeze. But if you can get them to work for your attention and affection, they're going to value that affection and attention way more than if you were the nice guy who was just being nice.
Giving it out for free. Like exactly. Chuck E. Cheese tokens.
Yeah, you got to be the, it's the, oh God, what was the parable of Mark and Diane or something like that? I'd have to look it up again.
Jack but
yeah,
and it,
yeah. So moving on. Again, Dark Triad works, and I said it before, it's not a good long-term mating strategy. It's great for short-term encounters. So hookups, friends with benefits, maybe, limited relationships, flings.
Well, I would argue it's best when you want to press the dread button, right? It's best when you want to get into that mode of, yeah, you know what? I, you know, I've still got it. Oh my God, they can bring it, right?
To an extent, yeah. Dread, I think, is more of a competition anxiety. That's what sparks dread. But having options by being disagreeable and being a challenge and having women vying for your attention does keep them on their toes. Let's see, being power hungry is attractive to women. Again, we've covered all this. They don't sweat the small stuff. My last serious girlfriend, good example of this, and I did it by accident. Had a party bus, had everybody out. It was a real fun time. And there was a minor accident and everybody kind of freaked out a little bit. And I just like, no big deal. And that not sweating the small stuff later on, once we started dating, she made a point that was the key moment that she boom, like just, yeah, that was like, yeah, that was the one that did it for her.
Yeah. Was, the world's not going to fall apart.
Yeah. I just kind of just didn't let it bother me. No big deal. And in my head, I'm like, fuck, you know, this shit just happened. But outwardly, it was just cool as a cucumber, and that was what did it for her. That was just interesting. So being aloof, uncaring asshole, it's the all of this kind of mushed together. And then it's not conducive to emotionally healthy long-term relationships. Again, these are the dark triad qualities are massively attractive in the short term, particularly during women's ovulating portion of their cycle. Now, that's not to say you shouldn't be never do this otherwise. Having a healthy balance is what it's all about.
100%. And when you talk about being aloof, I think I want everybody reading this to go and actually look up the definition of aloof. And really what that ties back to is the how not to get manipulated by other women, you know, people's emotions, but especially women's emotions. Yep. 101. And when you think about that, it's really interesting in the sense that like aloof means basically you are almost disregarding, like even if you're aware of it, you're just kind of saying, you know what, I'm not going to get caught up in all of that. Right. And what that is broadcasting outwardly is extremely powerful for an alpha guy.
Yeah. You're not fazed by the minutiae and the nitinoid things that are going to drive most people up the wall. You're not going to fall apart under pressure is what it signals. That's the main thing.
So, right, and it shows that you can handle a lot of stuff, I guess.
Right. So we kind of covered the portion of the course that I wanted to. Now we're going to do this deep dive into Brueffel's Law, because this is a really clutch concept, principle that most guys, you got to know this stuff. But this is the biggie right here out of tonight's material.
I love that we're coming back to this. I love this.
Again, so just kind of summarize. You got to know this.
I'm sorry, James.
Yeah.
I think I'll just get this in before we go into it.
Yeah.
I think that Brifold's Law is like something that an alpha guy doesn't really have to worry about. It's good to know about, but anyway, well, again, I digress.
Just remember that this course is the training wheels for guys that aren't quite there yet at that level, like what you're talking about. I agree that you guys don't have to think about this every stage of the game. Some people are going to be a little bit further along in their development. Others might need all of this. A lot of guys too, they're going to be somewhere between the extremes. They're going to be somewhere in the middle of that bell curve. That's the meat of guys out there. So depending on how much of this you need to implement, it varies. But so what you're talking about, though, I think is critical. Most guys really probably don't need to have this stuff on their mind 24/7. But anyway, I digress. So just to review, the female, not the male, determines the conditions of the animal family. Where the female can derive no benefit from association with the male, no such association takes place. Now, on the surface, this is common sense. If you've got nothing to offer, they're not going to associate with you. They're not going to date you. That's the end of it. Now, what are – and this is true for guys, too, to an extent. If the woman's not going to give it up, then you're not going to date her. If she's not going to – otherwise, you're just going to find yourself as an orbiter. You don't want that. So I think this is just – there's a male equivalent to this we've got to consider as well. So if you're not getting anything out of the relationship, then what's the point of the relationship? That's how this kind of bottom lines. The corollaries are what I find interesting. The past benefit provided by the guy doesn't provide for continued or future association. Just because you got married doesn't mean she won't cheat on you. Just because you got married doesn't mean she won't divorce your ass and take you to the cleaners. You get the idea.
Yeah, but if she married a guy who has consistently proven that he can make a ton of money and is, you know, in great shape and on and on and on, she could reasonably assume that those benefits will continue, right?
You're thinking logically, though.
I am.
Yeah. You're right. I'm not disagreeing. What's that, James?
I was just going to say, as long as they continue, then she can expect them to continue. Like, yeah. that's just the burden. That's one of the things. Like, this is a red pill concept that you should just get in your head from the start, is that it's you're on the burden of men to be at the top of your game all the time. And if you, like, want to be in the position of a high status male. So,
well, I think
we covered it at the beginning. Be the best version of yourself. Yeah.
Yep. Actually, you may have hopped in late. But I think there's a clutch concept here I want to kind of tie together. The past association provided by the male does not provide for continued or future association. This is expressed in another way. It's just your turn.
Yep.
This is the underpinnings of that concept. Now, any agreement where the male provides a current benefit in return for a promise of future association is null and void as soon as the male has provided the benefit. So if you are in a relationship where you find yourself that the woman cannot wait to get married, and then as soon as you do, she balloons up like a piece of cake. You know, what is the old joke? Women are allergic to wedding cake. Mm-hmm. And as soon as they do, they just balloon up. There's a lot of truth to that, in the sense that a lot of them will keep themselves in good shape. And then as soon as they get married or they get into a long-term relationship, all of that goes right out the window. It's called relationship weight. It's an actual
same
term
with boxers, studied, right? Like, once you've retired, there's no reason to keep your fighting weight up. Like, there really isn't.
Well, that's true. It's the same concept.
Yep.
But the important thing to take away from this is any agreement. The agreement is the key word here, where the male provides a current benefit in return for a promise of a future association. So just because you guys got married or you're in a long-term relationship, if you're even living together, it doesn't mean squat. There's no guarantees.
That's setting them up. This is setting a couple of really foundational concepts up here that I want to point out, which is number one, getting into an LTR, but number two, just understanding how to handle the conversation of like, hey, what are we? What is this in terms of relationship? I read a red pill post, I think it was a week and a half ago, where they called that particular strategy from women, the Georgia. And I love that about, you know, trying to put terms on the relationship and try to establish a commitment from the guy on the outright. And it goes back to exactly what you said, Joe, is get yours first.
Oh, I was just about to talk about that. Yeah, we talked about that before the show. A promise of future benefit has limited influence on current or future associations, with the influence inversely proportionate to the length of time of the benefit. The first part of this is the key part to me. A promise of future benefit has limited influence on current or future association. The promise of future benefit. Get yours first. I've always said this because I've gotten burned by this in the past myself before I learned these concepts. And a very simple version of this is open relationships. If you're not going to be, if you're together, but you have an open relationship and the deal is she'll give you a threesome or for whatever it might be, if you do X, Y, Z, make sure you're getting yours first, because that promise is out the door, out the window as soon as she gets hers. It's just the nature of the game. This is this corollary right here. The promise of a future benefit has a limited influence on the current or future association, the relationship. So if she's making a promise and you guys come to some sort of agreement, whatever that might be, you make sure you get yours first, because as soon as she gets hers, all bets are off. There's no guarantee you'll ever see a return on that investment.
Oh, yeah.
Truly.
Yeah. And then the other portion of this third corollary is just as important as well. The influence is inversely proportionate to the length of time until the benefit will be given. The influence is inversely proportionate to the length of time until the benefit will be given. So what are some examples of that?
I'll give you a great example. My wife and I, for a long time, have been trying to sort out, you know, some credit card debt that we've had hanging around. And the truth is, like, I got a larger income than her, and I've been putting, you know, tons and tons of payments away toward my credit cards. And she's just said, you know, man, I feel like we're ignoring my credit cards, and I feel like we're ignoring my financial priorities. And the reality is, like the longer that timeline goes on, the less she kind of really believes that benefit of my income is actually going to, you know, come to fruition for her. And what is her credit card debt? Now, mind you, we've taken this on, you know, since we were both married. So it's really under the context of our marriage debt. But the point being of, she's literally flat out told me, I will believe it when I see it. When I told her, hey, I'm going to put X thousands of dollars toward your credit card, she said, okay, buddy, I'll believe it when I see it. And that's challenging, right? And that's challenging in a relationship, right? You can meet a girl at a bar and say, like, oh, let me buy you a drink, right? And that's fine and all. But when you've established a baseline, I think it all comes back to baseline, right? When you've established a baseline of, you know what, I'm going to pay for one dinner out every other week, and that's what, you know, kind of the level I'm at, investment in this relationship. And, you know, that gives kind of a lens for women to look at your behavior and say, oh, well, he's stopped taking me out. Like, clearly that's an indicator. Or, oh, he's taking me out a little bit extra, right? Like, that's an indicator for them. And I'm not saying jump into their head, but you can certainly broadcast and kind of, I don't want to say shape, but certainly foster certain behaviors in a new relationship or in really any established relationship when you say, you know what? Things are going well. You're behaving the way I want. Let me actually give you a little bit more of my time and attention and resources. And, you know, on the flip side is, you know, things aren't really working the way I want them to. Let me not put forth the resources and time and attention that I'm putting in on a regular basis.
Yeah. I mean, a lot of guys don't really value their own resources and they don't really know what to expect in return. So you have to figure out, I guess, what a good price is for your investment. Yep. And really the only thing I had to say about Breufeldt's law is, put yourself in the position where your association with you is the benefit that the female derives.
That's an interesting concept. Yeah.
If you know what I mean. So,
well, and this kind of talks to that last piece of the third corollary, is that the It's directly proportionate to the degree to which the female trusts the male. So if she's desiring you, she wants you, then she should be, and she trusts you, the more likely she will be to fall into your frame and commit to whatever that agreement was. So does that kind of jive with what you're saying?
Yeah.
Yep. So hopefully, I mean, this is pretty much of a deep dive I've seen anybody go into on Briffle's Law. There's a lot to this. There is. The female, not the male, determines all of the conditions of the animal family. Now that right there kind of just sets that's frame in a nutshell right there. So navigating around that, that's a tough one to do as well. That's a hard nut to crack. So
what's interesting that you touch on that, because there's your frame, then there's the woman's frame, and then there's the frame of the relationship, right? Like what you've, again, it goes back to what you've established as a baseline. I don't want to belabor that point, but I think all of those are really worth touching on from a Briffle's Law standpoint of, look,
right,
the woman 9 times out of 10 is going to establish that.
You know, they will if you allow it. Now, there's a key thing that I think a lot of guys miss, and this is when you can shape the relationship to be an us frame. And as soon as you do that, it's you against the world. Now you are relying on each other in a sense, but that framework of a relationship of us versus them creates an automatic in-group preference. And I think a lot of guys fail to do this. And as soon as you do, if you can reframe the relationship to being a team, you and her versus the world, where everybody that's outside the relationship is not necessarily the enemy, but they don't have your best interests at heart, that frame is a positive structure to build the relationship on. And I wish more people would understand this. This is where a lot of relationships go wrong, where the guys don't do this, because you're, again, it's your job to set the frame. If you just fall into her frame, 9 times out of 10, maybe 99 times out of 100, you're going to be a social framework where a lot of her friends, family, outside influences, orbiters as well, are going to be pressuring her to corrupt and implode the relationship. I don't think anybody would disagree with this, because you see this all the time in social media. So if you can create the framework where you guys are against the world, all of those kind of impacts on the relationship are going to get bounced off of it like a shield in a lot of cases. It's what they call disqualifying the objection ahead of time. No, you're doing damage control in advance by setting the framework that all of these outside, it's honestly, this is the same thing that, what's that one crazy religion with Zeno? There's one blank on the term.
Scientology.
That's the one where they create oppressive persons. Anybody outside that's not in the in-group are negative influences to be avoided at all costs. And this is why they protect Tom Cruise to such a degree. He's got this little bubble around him. Now, I'm not saying make a cult and bring people into your relationships, but if you can create that framework that they're going to have on their mind, or just that natural, okay, these guys are talking crap about my boyfriend. They're not people that I need to have around me because they're not a good influence on, or they don't have our relationship at heart. That's my spiel on that. So it goes back to standards and expectations. If you have a girlfriend or a wife that has a shitload of orbiters, well, right there is a big red flag in its own right. So I digress.
No, I think you hit on an important point. I think when you say men set the frame, I want to make a distinction here for a lot of guys who have not, you know, maybe, you know, been in relationships where they've controlled a good amount of the power dynamic, or they've established some terms. I would agree with you, Joe. Men do set the frame, but when you think about the corollary to that, which is a relationship is a woman's job, right? To keep that up, right? To put forth that effort, right? To be providing that value. I think a lot of guys that are just starting out really get confused, or they get sidetracked as to, yes, I'm setting the frame, but it's my responsibility to keep it up. It's not your responsibility to actually maintain the nature of the relationship. You don't have to emotionally connect with your woman. You know, it's not an obligation, right? Like, you know, the verbal intercourse is optional type thing. But what you can do is you can be open to it. You can qualify the terms with which you'll accept some type of interaction. I think that's really a key difference of, you know, when you start getting into actually, you know, getting into a long-term relationship and accepting and rejecting certain things about what you can and cannot tolerate. I think that's an important point about, we set the frame, but relationships really are a woman's job and a woman's obligation.
Yeah. I mean, you're kind of going back to the old tried and true, roles of the relationships where you got the guys, the breadwinner, and then the women were the homemakers. It's kind of the same dynamic. It's the traditional roles of male and female relationships. It's the traditional role because it's what's worked for eons. So, we talk about this on the Wednesday show all the time about how guys tend to be more looks focused and they want to spread the seed. Women tend to be relationship focused and they want to screen for the guys they're going to give them the best relationship. At least red pill women do. Not all women. But red pill women realize that what's traditionally worked, the reality of relationships, what's worked over the eons is what we call traditional relationships. For women, that's what they're focused on. That's what they do. For guys, not so much. Again, because the game has changed for us. The advent of no-fault divorce, divorce rape, you know, child support, all these issues. Yeah, it's completely undermined relationships as we know it. So the red pill is to recognize that fact and to navigate dating and relationships within this new framework, this legal framework, and also unchecked hypergamy. So
I think as bad as it's ever been.
It's great if you're in that top 5-10% of guys where you can just go on Tinder and have a few texts and you're ready to go for sex 3-4 nights a week. Mm-hmm. That's great if that's what you want to do. But if you are saying that top 5-10% and you want to get a relationship, well, how can you do that when all of those women that you're interested in are also hooking up with the other guys in that 5-10% group? You see what I'm saying? It is. So even if you do have the availability, the option to wife a woman up at your leisure, the problem is there's not a lot of women that are worthy of being wifed up anymore because the whole thing's changed.
And then they can
catch 22.
Yeah, it's later. So,
and then, yeah, like you said, they can always, peripheral's law kicks in and then next thing you know, yeah. So it is what it is. I just want to give a shout out to Phil Town. This is an awesome book. I'm going to put this on full screen. So right now with it's not focusing. There it is.
There it is.
Yeah. With the market being wild and crazy and just nuts right now, I highly recommend folks grab this book. It's a really quick read. And I talked about this over on the finance channel. He goes over the 4 M's of investing. If you want to do something more than just buy an index fund and do what the market average does, this is a fantastic book to get started on. And as you get better at investing, and like I said, this is a great time to do it. A few weeks ago was even better. But with the stock market wild and there's all this stuff going on, there's a lot of good deals to be found on the market right now. So we talked about this before with status. If you have built up a huge net worth, you can start doing things like, I don't know, Hugh Hefner, where the guy was 80, 90 years old having group sex for his birthday with women 18 to 25. That is the kind of empire building that I think guys need to focus on long term. Because once you get, because there is still a wall for guys, believe it or not, I know we don't want to talk about this, but
it's under 70.
Somewhere in there. Yeah. So if you want to, hitting the gym, being sociable and all this is great, but you can only do this for so long. And somewhere in your 50s is probably when it starts changing, where you don't have what's that?
It's very true.
Yeah. It is. And it's something that I've kind of seen firsthand with other guys. Now you can still be in your 60s and still do well. And even your 70s, even your 80s, even your 90s, but
you're not
going to have
with young 20s women for the most part.
But it really depends on what else you've got going on and you've built your lifestyle around. We talked about this in the beginning of the show, and this is kind of how I'm bringing this back around. One second here.
Which is why we're creating the fraternity.
Yes.
So head on over to TRP Red and join the fraternity. thing, Tribe, and check out what it's all about. It's all about men grouping together to secure economic and sexual benefits through collaboration.
Yep. And just to kind of talk about what we were doing before, it's right there. And what I'm talking about is how to structure a lifestyle. This isn't just for guys in their teens, 20s, and 30s, and 40s. This is all the way up until you're elderly. This lifestyle, books like this, this course, this is going to help you establish that framework long term. Just being able to approach a cute girl on the side of the street, that's training wheels. This is the beginning. Down the road, having an empire established where you're the highest status guy in the building, that's what you want to see. So that's the long-term plan. Right now, we're just kind of stepping through it, beginning, getting into those beginning stages. Now, if you're mid-career, middle-aged, you might already have some money. Maybe you aren't comfortable taking the risks to build an empire. There's other things we can do with that as well. So again, Patreon is one way to get a hold of us. Not Patreon, I just went blank. Discord, I'm sorry. We've got the Discord community. You've also got the TRP Red. There's a lot of ways to get in touch. We do take donations on Patreon that helps to fund our assets and to help cover things like StreamYard, which is who we do all of our streaming through. Mike needs a new set of headphones. Help us out. So again, this isn't free, but we are doing it free because this is information that guys need to learn. And totally. You need to hear this. So
read the sidebar.
Read the sidebar. We now have it in PDF form on Patreon, on Discord. I think it was linked over on Reddit for as long as that lasts. It might be up on TRP Red. I'm not sure. Don't quote me on that. But yeah, the entire PDF of the sidebar is now available. Also, I wish I could remember which what the website was off the cup of my head. I cannot remember what it was. But all of TRP is now available in searchable form off of Reddit. It's been entirely backed up. I love it. Yep. So you can search through the top threads of the first couple of years. Because we had a lot of good material back then.
As it should be.
Some juicy threads.
There was some good stuff. But unfortunately, you can't just search by top threads anymore because now that the community has grown so much that a lot of the popular stuff today is
garbage.
Well, the problem, it is in some cases, but something that might have gotten 1,000 votes in 2012, or something that might have been a top thread in 2012, won't, just because we only had maybe 1,000 people. Yeah. Right. When you've got 200,000, a million people, that's the old good stuff got dwarfed by the new moderate stuff, mediocre stuff. So it's really tough to navigate. But this website, thank God he did it. Now you can search on the dates and the years, and it's awesome. What's that?
Some power creep there as far as the Reddit goes.
Yeah. So, and for as long as it lasts, they're going to kill it. They were going to kill it last year. It's probably going to happen this year with the election coming up. They're going to nix anything that's not politically correct and blessed by the left, the political world.
That's how it goes. I mean, when it comes down to it, we go back to the couple of things that we hit on last week, which is that we're trying to build personal power, you know, put forth men that can be capable of self-leadership, right? That's the whole point of that.
Yeah.
Give yourself a your own mission, your own purpose. And this introduction, as you break it down, this slide that's on here is exactly the component parts of that. Understanding how to screen women, structure lifestyle, provide a roadmap. Those are the prerequisites. Like before you actually go out and socialize, try to run game, try to dread your long-term relationship. These are things you have to do. It's tough work. It's things that you have to invest yourself in before you can say, oh, you know what? I want to go out and get my dick wet. Like that's challenging.
Yep. So, and then what I find interesting, just kind of a side note, is the black pill community is very, it's basically the red pill with nihilism added on top of it. All they seem to care about is looks maxing, DNA, the scientific aspects of psychology, evolutionary psychology, and evolutionary biology. But I don't know why. They throw the baby out with the bathwater and miss a lot of the core concepts. They just, it doesn't, if you're, I guess, into, from what I've seen on Facebook and these other groups, I don't get it. So post down below if you've got a thought on that. I'm really interested to see why they're willing to dismiss a lot of the core concepts, but embrace others that kind of just fit their ideology, for lack of a better word.
I would say there's a common thread there between the MGTOW stuff, which is it's cognitive dissonance, right? It's that I can't have this anyway, so I'm going to just find a reason to not like it. And that's nothing matters anyway. We're all going to die. And the MGTOW approach is, you know, women aren't worth having anyway. They're just going to ruin your life. Yada, yada, yada. You know, I can understand those threads of thought. At the same time, I love women. Women are great. But there is a way to actually engage with them to make sure that you're not just taken for a ride.
Yeah. I see it as being a kind of a defeatist attitude. And I don't like that.
Totally. I don't subscribe to that either.
Now there's valid reasons to go MGTOW. Maybe you've just had enough. The juice isn't worth the squeeze. That's fine. It's the ones where they don't put in the effort. They haven't really personally experienced the positives or the negatives. They've seen what's happened to others. And they just assume it's going to happen to them.
So if you had less than 2 divorces, you can't be a MGTOW, right? Is that what you're saying?
I don't know about 2, but
at least one.
We're on the same page in that sense.
At least one.
Yeah.
Give it a shot once.
Yeah. You've got to have the experience to really say yay or nay. And it goes back to what we said before. If you don't have the experience with women to learn and have those encounters, the positive or the negative for that matter, you really have no business with, we're getting stuff down in the chat now. Yeah. You really have no business because you don't have a basis of a comparison.
So I can't blame any guy who actually was married and just decided after they got divorced, like I'm not doing this again. I can't hate on that.
Seriously.
I don't think I'd ever want to get married again, but I'll still date.
We
can still get married. We're just not going to do any legal paperwork.
100%. I can't.
I have no problem with that. Yep.
No judgment here. With that, do you want to take some comments?
Yes. I was just looking at that. Blake, go back a little ways here. I've displayed aloof behavior in the workplace, but I've been met with hostility. Yes. Well, so if you're doing this in a workplace, you got to be careful because it could come off like you don't care about your job or there's a lot of negative consequences with there. Also, don't forget, don't shit where you eat. That's a big one. So don't go out there trying to hit on girls at work because God knows, man, HR, they're going to be up your ass. Again, be attractive. Don't be unattractive. But also don't put yourself at risk if you don't need to in that sense.
Yeah, I think
it's counter the dark triad traits we were talking about, but it's your job. Okay. That has to come first.
It's not entirely. I think you can be one of the dark triad kind of guys if you in the office if you want, which is, you know, never tell people in the office your true intentions. You know, never broadcast what you're trying to do at work.
But you're getting back to the 48 laws of power now.
No, totally. It's a laws of power thing. But what it's in particular, as it relates to his question with regard to aloof behavior in the workplace, I think it's fine to be aloof of people's direct communication styles, like certain employees and how they interact with you. I think that's fine to be aloof of that. Mm-hmm. What I think is not okay to be aloof of is like corporate initiatives, like when things that are, you know, clearly a trend that are that you need to be cognizant of, maybe not buy into completely, but at least be, you know, orientated towards and cognizant of. I don't think you can be aloof of corporate initiatives. I think that's just a career killer. Please go ahead.
So I have a personal anecdote that kind of relates to what Blake was talking about. So we had a project manager who was high strung, and we're in the middle of a really big deployment of our system. And I just naturally aloof, you know, military, adapt and overcome, roll the punches, embrace the chaos, because things never go off without a hitch. You know, no battle plan survives engagement with the enemy. And again, project manager, high strung dude. And when things weren't going perfectly to the plan, you know, right according to plan, it rolls off my back. That aloofness drove him up the wall, and that caused more grief. So you got to be mindful of the dynamics and the personalities at play in your office and your management structure. So if being aloof, maybe it's just time to just step away. And if it doesn't bother you, keep your mouth shut. maybe talk to your friends at work or coworkers, but when you're around certain people and that aloofness will torque them off, just bite your tongue, especially if they're higher up in the chain than you are. Just something to keep in mind.
I think 100%. I think going back to his question, can some tell when you're not just going to fall for their BS? I think 9 times out of 10 comes down to communication styles, yep. Right? And that is, you know, if you've gone through DISC training, right? I've gone through DISC training and there's direct influencing and I forget the other ones because I'm not those. But the point being is some folks you can talk to and say, you know what? Things are bad. They're going to be bad for a little bit. It's going to be okay. Or there's some folks that you need to say, hey, how is this affecting your day-to-day type thing? And when you research those communication styles, figure out what you are, figure out what those other people at your work are. I think when you ask that question of can other people see through the BS, I think what it comes down to is if you can flex a little bit, again, Joe, to your point, it comes down to 48 laws of power. When you can flex those other, you know, styles and say, you know what, I can come off a little bit like somebody else and I can relate to this other communication style, I think that makes a big difference.
Mm-hmm. Yep. So hopefully that addresses your comment there, Blake. Let's see here. What else do we have? I like this one from JR. ASD is the yada, yada, yada from Seinfeld. Yeah, it kind of is in that sense. It's just, it's a redirect. It's it's that plausible deniability. It's just taking the attention away from her and putting it on somebody else.
I like this in the sense that the yada, yada, yada is not significant at all. And she knows it's not significant.
Everybody knows it's not. Yeah. Except for those that can't read subtext.
Yeah. But the key piece to this is she wants you to get past the yada, 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 yada. Right.
Yeah. Well, and so just so we're clear, we haven't gotten to LMR just yet.
She wants you to win.
Well, that's right? Now we're speaking more towards LMR, which often gets confused with ASD. ASD is more what happens after the fact. LMR is what happens before the act. Mm-hmm. We'll talk more about that later on next week's episode, actually. Don't want to get into that too much right now because it's a good topic. It's very controversial for some reason. What's that?
I don't want to steal your thunder. Yeah.
Oh, nah. Let's see here. Black pillars. Also, JR, tonight we kind of talked a little bit about frame in the in how it relates to Brifolt's law. So if you want more on that, stay tuned. I think next week we're going to cover more on frame. It's coming up right after feminine imperative. Black pillars are looking for an explanation as to why the world should work their way. Red pill has always been about working within the rules of the real world. I don't know about that with the first statement that the way it should work. I think a lot of the black pill guys are more science-based. They use a lot of the research that backs up their ideology.
It's idealism.
It is idealism. And yeah, it is in that sense, more of ideology than idealistic. The MRA guys are definitely idealistic. They see the inequalities in the system and they are hell-bent on trying to get it to be more fair. But in reality, that's never going to happen because of that feminine imperative we just mentioned.
Yeah, I think I like the red pill for that reason. It's pragmatic.
Right.
You know, if you want to really go back and watch the Matrix video, probably the black pillars have actually a point in terms of like, hey, one could choose to just like you can unplug and just hey, stuff goes crazy, right? But in reality, most of us live in the real world. Most of us have real ramifications. To Blake's question of, you know, how is my job affected by this? How is my relationship affected by the way I actually look at my interactions with people, the way I actually, you know, communicate, the way I accept boundaries and things like that? All of those have ramifications. So when you think about the red pill, and to go back to your question, Blake, about working within the rules of those, I think it goes back to really understanding your reality, what you will and will not accept, but also, you know, what is your mission? How do all those things tie together as to your mission, purpose, and who you are? And I think for most black pillars, the one thing, I don't know much about the black pill, but the one thing, you know, criticism I would level at them is that they don't really have a mission.
They definitely aren't fucking anybody.
Yeah, well, you said it.
Well, there's our one for the episode.
There you go. That's it.
Boom.
Let's see, Harmon. Let's see, just turned 18, headed to a big college. Advice on balancing a rigorous course load on track for medicine and maintaining plates possible LTR. Step one, why are you going to a big college when you could go to a local community college and save a shitload of money? And unless you're getting a free ride, that's a different story. So I want an answer to that first off, because that's a monetarily
sage advice from a guy who's a different generation than mine. My so the millennial generation, right, was told, like, go to college, take out a loan, do whatever you got to do, get a bachelor's degree.
Sure.
But that's not the right advice. Like, candidly, like, that's not the best option, which is go get an associate's, like, go transfer to a big school. Mm-hmm. So beyond that, if you are taking a rig, and I'm using quotes, rigorous course load on track for medicine, you should not be doing a pre-med major. You should not be going to, like, a big four university, doing a pre-med major, racking up the fucking dollars and hundreds of thousands of student loan debt. Yeah, to just get what is effectively, you know, most of your peers are going to come from either other countries or they're going to come from a non-pre-med major. Yeah, to get you set up for medicine. They're all going to be called doctors at the end of the day.
So his parents are stupid rich. So it sounds like they're going to foot the bill. Well, if that's the case, dude,
I mean,
make it a 5-year, not a 4-year plan.
Why are you asking us? Yeah.
Lower the course load a little bit so you can enjoy yourself in college. This is the only time you're going to have access to 18 to 22 year old women to that degree. Because most colleges are 60% female.
In that case, I would say don't upset the gravy train.
Yeah, especially in a medical school.
You're happy, get good grades, but do whatever you can on the side, man. Anything.
Have fun while you're there, though. I'll tell you that. If I could do everything over again, this is what I would do. So, and I've actually thought about this, and I just said it. I would go back and make college a planned 5-year program, not 4. I would lighten the course load just a little bit, so this way I can enjoy myself on the weekends. Thursday, Friday, Saturday is party time, and you can do that if you've lightened the course load by about 25-30%. So yeah, you'll have to eat another year at school. It's going to delay things a little bit, but that lack of stress you cannot put an emphasis on that, because you can always make more money, but you can never make more time. You will never do like the Van Wilder kind of approach to college is what I would do. Something like that, where you can enjoy that access you'll never have the rest of your life. Not unless you become the Hugh Hefner or the Giovanni Vacci guy, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah. If money is no object, like, might as well avail yourself of all the things that college has to offer, which is like certainly get an education, but make sure you get everything else outside of that, which is, you know, if you just want to get out there and date, or if you just want to get out there and, like, slay pussy, that's fine. I'm not going to criticize you for that. But one big takeaway that people forget about when they go to school is a network. Like, coming out of school, you could be as well educated as you could be. You could go for whatever job. If you are not a person that's networking, none of that matters. And I guarantee
that's the key takeaway from Ivy League educations, is you build those personal networks that you're going to rely on for the rest of your life. They're going to give you access to things that you would never get otherwise. It's not what you know, it's who you know. And Ivy League colleges go a long way towards giving you access to businesses and careers you'll never see otherwise. This is especially true in business. When you look at CEOs, CTOs, CFOs, your executive level officers, they're all coming from those Ivy League pools because they all know each other. They all went to school with each other. They've got kids. They've got people in their social circles. They're different fraternities, your fraternity brothers, or just those that you came up with in that peer group are going to last a lifetime as far as access to opportunities goes. Now, for those that aren't going to an Ivy League school or don't have rich parents, and I started to talk about this before, this is the Aaron Cleary kind of approach to college. Keep it cheap. Keep it simple. Go to your local community colleges. Get your 2 years done. Go to your state school for your last two, because they're going to have usually they play together. They play nice. So where I'm at, the local community college and then the state university, they're all part of the same system. So when you take your associate's degree, your associate's level courses, those automatically transfer towards your bachelor's program. So when you actually get your bachelor's degree, you're only going to school for 2 years and you're getting that university's name on your degree, even though you only went there for maybe 30 or 60 credit hours.
It's so such a good recommendation.
You'll save thousands of dollars doing this. Mm-hmm. And you're not probably closer to like tens of thousands of dollars when you think about it, because you're not gonna have to pay for the housing. You know, you're not paying for the more costly credit hours for the courses. There's immense savings baked in. Plus, you can start going to and oftentimes you can also get part-time jobs there. So you're more, because whenever you go to a university town, those jobs are just soaked up. And there's so many people vying for those jobs. If you're going to a community college, you're usually going to be living at home and you're living in an area that's going to have way more job opportunities for people your age. Put it that way. Less competition in that market.
That's huge.
Yeah.
In terms of maintaining plates, possible LTR, I would say neither of those things. I would say lift.
Oh, yeah.
And get big, eat right, get involved in some social activities. And I don't know. I would definitely not LTR. I don't know.
I would not LTR either. Definitely plate spinning is the way to go.
Yeah.
You're going to see a lot of friends with benefits and fuck buddies. That's just the standard default for relationships nowadays in that age. Because the clubs don't even start. They don't even get popping until sometimes 11, 12, 1 a.m. in a lot of these cities.
I think it's important to emphasize that women are going to be surprised if you are not, if you don't have options, you're sticking out like a red, like a red thumb.
Yep. So here's something that's kind of counterculture too, that really shocked me. If you can find somebody that's got their shit together, that can be a mentor, that is in your local area, that can get to the college town, and you guys wing each other. And again, the fraternity is great for this. We're still building this community out. If you haven't joined it, check it out sometime, or at least find somebody in your local community that you can play off of. Because way back when we were doing the whole PUA thing, and I was already in my 30s, and we went to College Park, met these two girls, and there's these guys kept coming over to the girls, and we just kind of battled them away, just left, right, and center, the whole AMOG destroyer stuff. And then the guys, they finally gave up. And they talked to me afterwards, and they're like, there's no way for us to compete against you guys. And it was a shocking revelation. I didn't realize, think about it, because we have all of the stuff that the women wanted, you know, game, resources, we could dress better because we had the money. All of these different things lined up that the women were reacting and responding positively to, even though we were 10, 15 years older than them, in some cases 20 years older. And these guys just couldn't compete. So if you can find a wing that's in that kind of segment, that has that kind of those positive traits going for them, you guys are going to play off each other so well. So just something to consider in the future, because most women they're attracted to guys a few years older than themselves. So if you're 18, they're 18, they're going to be going for guys 22, 24, 26. And then the older they get, 22, they're going for guys 25, 26, 30. Do you see how this kind of trend continues in life? And then the older they get, the more bigger the age gap becomes of what they find attractive. Yeah. And a lot of these women, they're only dating guys their own age because they don't have guys going there that have that status and the attractive qualities that they're really maximally attractive to. Now, we see this a little bit different with Tinder and all that. But girls in those peak attractive years of 18 to 22 don't need that stuff, generally speaking.
There's not a 24-year-old that I haven't met that's not at least attracted to a guy in their 35 to 40 years.
Yeah. As long as the guys keep their shit together and they're going to the gym, eating right, they're not.
But that's the thing.
Yeah.
Most guys by, you know, their late 30s, early 40s have their shit together. Like, they have lower skin elasticity, so they look more jacked than a younger guy does. They have higher earning potential.
The potential is there. Put it that way.
Well, yeah. Yes, potential if they've actually put the work in and done what they need to do. The higher earning potential is there, but also they should have some level of emotional intelligence. Like, if you cannot pass shit tests at 40, then what are you doing? Like, read the sidebar. Dude, just go back to the beginning. but you should have that stuff down because you should have encountered enough people to really kind of frame your behavior, so to speak.
Yep. Harmon, my last thing I'm going to give, the last bit of advice I'm going to give you is kind of what Mike was just saying. I don't want you to end up like one of my former students did. And he was a nice guy. The guy makes over $1 million a year as a patent attorney, a patent lawyer. But he was so socially awkward in school, he just closed down and didn't become social at all. And he suffered the consequences. The guy's got millions of dollars in the bank, but he never even held a girl's hand, or I think that was as far as he got, was holding a girl's hand, but he never even kissed a girl, and he was already in his 30s.
Brutal.
So there's extremes, okay? So thankfully, I got him out of his shell, and he started doing okay. But yeah, I don't want you to go down that route. So just because you might have some negative experiences, don't shut down. Just learn from the experiences and try and take away some lessons that you can shape future interactions in a positive direction. All right? So we've been going for about 90 minutes. Are there any we do have a few questions here. Let's see. As a 20-year-old, how do you combat this? Which part is that? Combat what, GetGoFlow? I'm not sure what he's trying to combat. Older guys coming in and snagging the girls?
Maybe.
How do you combat this? Well, good game. Being able to blow guys up by amogging, maybe. There's a lot of tactics you could do.
First, the first thing to know is you don't combat anything. You work within the framework of the sexual dynamics, right? Like if you are the guy, that's the only guy, that's their option, then you have a lot more flexibility. If you are in a social situation where there's a lot of chads out there, there's a lot of guys that are fit, that have their stuff together, or seemingly have their stuff together, then you got to kind of run with the pack, so to speak. But
it's a sexual marketplace. So what do you bring to the table? If women are selling and you're buying, how much are you willing to pay?
Yeah.
What do you bring to bear in the sexual marketplace?
And that goes back to exactly what we talked about, which is, emphasize your strengths, not your weaknesses.
Here we go.
Don't play anybody else's game.
That's clutch right there. And I learned this in martial arts years ago. So you never want to kick with a kickboxer. You don't want to punch with a boxer. You don't want to wrestle with a wrestler. You're not going to fight against – that's their bread and butter. You want to adapt your strategies so you can take advantage of their weaknesses. It's the same thing like what you're just talking about right here. Women the same age dating at a higher age range. That's nature. There's nothing you can do about that. So you're always going to be competing against a wider range of guys than what the women are having to deal with. Just the nature of the game. So how do you compete with this? Man, there's a lot of things you can do. So in a very, very short, concise version of this, we just said it before. Think about what you bring to bear. What do you have to offer? Maximize your positives. Minimize the negatives. If you're short, maybe put some lifts in your shoes. Get wider by hitting the gym. Get ripped. If you're fat, lose weight. God knows I need to.
I'll tell you that the best thing you can do, honestly, is if you're worried about, like, for example, if you're an early 20s guy, right? And I'm a upper 30s guy, right? And I like to lift. I like to lift big. I'm a big fan of that. I like to talk to people. I'm extroverted, right? I make great money. But if you're an early 20s guy, maybe you don't make as much money. Maybe you don't lift as big. Maybe you are just as extroverted as me. However, you're in a lot better health than I am, right? So you can maybe invite people out to rock climbing once a week. Maybe you can afford to actually, you have a lot more time than I have, right? Maybe you can afford to actually like go work on your hobbies, go, on, bike rides, get into a cycling group, whatever that is. Like you have more time than I have, then invest in that as a strength. That's what I would argue. It's
time and opportunity as well. You've got access that older guys don't have because you're just by nature of being in their social circle. You're seeing them every day in the halls at school. It's called propinquity. We're going to talk about 100%. That next week in the course.
100%. You should be at early 20s. You should be target saturated.
Yeah. Right? Your exposure is going to be sky high as well as your propinquity. We're going to talk more about that next week. I think this is actually a good point to call it. I agree. We've been going for about 90 minutes now. Again, like, subscribe, hit the notification bell, head on over to TRP Red, find that tribe for the fraternity, hit us up on Discord as well. And if you want access to the fraternity to meet guys in your local areas, this sounds like a dating service. Talk to myself or James.
Guys,
yeah.
In your local city, just
hot local singles.
Yeah. Hit us up and we'll vet you and we'll put you through the put you in touch with the right guys. All right. So thank you for joining us, Mike, James. Thank you for helping us out with this as well. This has been great. And yeah, so till next week, we will see you guys. Enjoy.
Later.
Thanks, guys.